Srimad Bhagavatam.
So it is the first canto, chapter 19, entitled The Appearance of Sukadev Goswami, text 36. Anyatate vyakta gater darsanam nam. No, darsanam nakatam rena nitaram riyamananam samsidasya vanisaya. Yes. Anyata, otherwise, te, your, avyaktagate, of one whose movements are invisible. Darsanam, meeting. Naha, for us. Katam, how. Nrinam, of the people. Nitaram, specifically. Mriyamananam, of those who are about to die. Samsidasya, of one who is all perfect. Vanyasa, voluntary appearance. Translation. Otherwise, without being inspired by Lord Krishna, how is it that you have voluntarily appeared here, though you are moving incognito to the common man and are not visible to us who are on the verge of death? Purport. The great sage Sukadev Goswami was certainly inspired by Lord Krishna to appear voluntarily before Maharaj Pariksit, the great devotee of the Lord, just to give him the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. One can achieve the nucleus of the devotional service of the Lord by the mercy of the spiritual master and the personality of Godhead. The spiritual master is the manifested representative of the Lord to help one achieve ultimate success. One who is not authorized by the Lord cannot become a spiritual master. Srila Sukadev Goswami is an authorized spiritual master, and thus he was inspired by the Lord to appear before Maharaj Pariksit and instruct him in the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. One can achieve the ultimate success of going back to Godhead if he's favored by the Lord sending his true representative. As soon as a true representative of the Lord is met by a devotee of the Lord, the devotee is assured a guarantee for going back to Godhead just after leaving the present body. This, however, depends on the sincerity of the devotee himself. The Lord is seated in the heart of all living beings, and thus he knows very well the movements of all individual persons. As soon as the Lord finds that a particular soul is very eager to go back to Godhead, the Lord at once sends his bona fide representative. The sincere devotee is thus assured by the Lord of going back to Godhead. The conclusion is that to get the assistance and help of a bona fide spiritual master means to receive the direct help of the Lord himself. So Maharaj Pariksit was preparing to leave this world after he had been cursed to leave his body within 7 days. And in the midst of that, Sukadev Goswami, a bona fide spiritual master, appeared. Maharaj Pariksit could understand that this was the mercy of the Supreme Lord upon him to send him such a devotee. And he could understand this is not by chance, but somehow or other, by the arrangement of the Lord, his authorized representative has now come. It is said that prior to the appearance of Sukadev Goswami, the different sages who were assembled there on the banks of the Ganges, accompanying Maharaj Pariksit, who was sitting down facing the north and fasting and waiting for death to appear. At that time, different sages were arguing about what Maharaj Pariksit should do. But no one could agree. But as soon as Sukadev Goswami appeared, everyone accepted. Here's an authority. So Sukadev Goswami was not some proclaimed spiritual master by popular vote, but Sukadev Goswami was commanding genuine respect by his outstanding spiritual qualifications. So in this way, the spiritual master must be very dedicated to the teachings of Lord Krishna, both in practice. He must be fully conversant with the conclusions of the scripture. He must follow these. He must teach them to others and assist them in following these teachings. So the definition of the Acharya is stated in the Vayu Purana. The Chaitanya Charitamrita said, Guru Krishna Rupahaya Shastire Praman Guru Rupa Krishna Kripa Korena Bhakta Gan, which means that the spiritual master is the form of Krishna. This is the proof of the scripture. It is revealed in so many scriptures that the spiritual master is the direct representative of Krishna. And it is said, Guru Rupa Krishna Kripa Korena Bhakta Gan. It is in this form of the spiritual master that Krishna is delivering a disciple. Once one accepts a spiritual master, then Krishna accepts one's service through that spiritual master. And in this way, one is actually obliged in that relationship. One cannot simply say it doesn't work. One must make it work by devotional service. Because service offered to Krishna outside that relationship is not very pleasing to Krishna and doesn't have much potency to attract Krishna. One may get a particular instruction from the spiritual master to serve Krishna in some way or other, and one may not like it so much. So then one may decide to serve Krishna in another way, more according to one's liking. But that is not to the liking of Krishna. So then one cannot expect that there will be so many blessings, because this system of disciplic succession is the system of Krishna. It is not a system which was invented by any man, but is the system invented by the Supreme Lord, and He has Himself accepted a spiritual master and established that this is one of the basic principles in spiritual life. That's not easy. It is never without struggle that such a relationship can work. It is not that it is automatic and that everything is blissful from day one and every instruction is just descending from the spiritual world and it's full of nectar potency, right? And every word the spiritual master says is just totally inspiring the heart and everything, that it's fulfilling everything you've always been waiting for and always been dreaming for, and yes, here it is. It may be like that sometimes. It definitely happens. But it may also happen that the order is leaves one shell-shocked and leaves one suddenly in the cold and suddenly thinking, but wait a minute, I really wasn't planning to do this with my life. Right. That may well be. But whatever that order is, it is to be carried as a jewel on the head, as a great treasure. And if one is taking somehow or other to the order, sometimes in a spirit of great inspiration, other times in a spirit of surrender, then one is actually experiencing the mercy of Krishna. And that mercy of Krishna will leave us inspired in spiritual life. It is as simple as that. Sukadev Goswami was such a spiritual master who came to tell Parikshit Maharaj what the duties are of a man who is about to die. Mriyamananam, a man who is about to die. And, well, everybody is about to die, right? This is the nature of material existence, that everyone is about to die, and exactly when it's going to happen we don't know, but it can happen any time. When my grandfather died, my father took me to the cemetery for the first time. It was eerie, right, walking there on a cemetery. So I was certainly excited looking around. And I was 5 years old, and I could read in those days. So I was reading the tombstones. And I saw some tombstones of people who lived shorter than me, right? Who were born after me and who died before me. I saw that right on these stones. So I was thinking, like, wow, this was more interesting than the grave of my grandfather, right, where we went to put some flowers. I mean, that, you know, that he had died, that was to be expected. After all, he was really old, right? He was very, very old, and he was overweight as well, so it was not at all surprising that he died. He, in fact, had such a big belly that he could not see his own feet, right? For years, the man never saw his own feet. Yeah. Huge. I don't look like that particular grandfather. I'm from the other side. But whatever might be, that he left didn't impress me so much, to be honest. But when I walked there and I saw that people had died who were younger than me, I was thinking. I really thought about that for a couple of days. It is a fact that death is always there, and Srimad Bhagavatam points out that one starts dying from the very moment one takes birth. Right? We cannot say, and at the time of death, and now it has started. Where does it start, the time of death? Does it start 3 days before death, 1 week before death, 1 month before death, 1 year before death, 10 years before death? When does it start? The time of death. It's just some biased decision to say when it starts. But Bhagavatam points out it starts at the time of birth. Fortunately, we are not so depressed about it, because we see death as a transition and nothing more. We don't see it as the curtains drop, the end, right? The final performance. It is over. I remember the British comic Tommy Cooper, who used to do all kinds of acts with a Turkish hat on, a fez. And it is said that Tommy Cooper, being a comic, right, had a heart attack on stage. And he was flapping and dying, right, on the stage and rolling around. And the audience was just cracking up. They were rolling off their seats, right? And they thought it was the best act he ever made. And he actually died like that. I guess that's what he always wanted, I guess, right? Being a comic. But that's how he died. Everyone was shocked when they found out he was really dead. Oh well. One can leave his body anytime, any place, in the most amazing situations, right? In the most unexpected, most undangerous situations, the most tame, the most safe, right? And one may survive the most risky ones, right? So many times, and then you die in something really stupid, right? Something really safe and secure, and there you slip and somehow or other manage to do it. Drown in 3 centimeters of water or whatever. Whatever may be, a devotee is not concerned about that. A devotee is learning, is practicing to get in the mood that whatever comes, comes. Not from maybe this, you know, watch out, bring some extra security here and ward off death in so many ways. This is not our preoccupation, to get all kinds of insurances, all kinds of security, to somehow or other have every possible inoculation just to make sure
that we are not falling prey to that terrible thing, death, and postpone it as long as possible.
Maharaj Pariksit could have done that. Maharaj Pariksit is said, when he was cursed by the Brahmana boy Sringi, he was cursed to die within 7 days. But Maharaj Pariksit had the power to actually not accept that curse. Right? By his, he had so much power. But he did not do so. No, whatever comes from the Brahmanas, the Brahmana class are my superiors, and I take it that I deserve this because, after all, I did hang a dead snake around the neck of Samika Rishi, and therefore for this I deserve all kinds of punishments. I am a great offender. So he did not resist it. So he was a qualified disciple. And this is mentioned in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that when the spiritual master is qualified and when the disciple is qualified, then the relationship can be successful. So many times we are making a whole thing about the qualifications of the spiritual master. We are looking at that. But there also are many, many qualifications required for to be a disciple. It is actually not so easy to be a disciple. Disciple means that one must find out the standards of prescribed behavior. Disciple means that one is following the scriptures. Disciple means that the relationship that exists between guru and disciple is governed by Krishna. It is not governed by the sentiment that exists between the two. In this world, relationships are governed by the sentiment that exists between two people. Right? And according to that, they are reciprocating with one another. But the relationship between guru and disciple is governed by the scriptures. The sentiment, there may be sentiment also. In fact, there must be sentiment. It says in scriptures, sudrida suridam. There must be a relationship, a firm friendship. There must be a genuine relationship of appreciation, of trust, and so on. But beyond that, the relationship is governed by the scriptures. As good as God, I was told, when I approached my spiritual master for initiation, he said, as good as God, are you prepared? And I said, well, I don't know. Yes, I thought I don't know. I didn't say that. I just said in, with a weak voice, yes. Because it's not so simple, right? But that is Krishna's standard. What can we say? That is Krishna's system. So somehow or other, gradually, we must bring this relationship to that point. For me, it was not so easy because I had been initiated before. And then, somehow or other, that relationship did not work. Somehow or other, that spiritual master did not maintain these spiritual standards. So then, to start again was not so easy. And to get into the mood of, like, being disciple again was a little difficult. I was the temple president of Vrindavan, one of the big international headquarters of ISKCON. People would salute me as I would walk by. Pranams. Half the town would come and offer respect, what to speak of the devotees in the temple, right? And suddenly I had to sit in a yajna again with the new bhaktas and take off my Brahmin thread and sit down there and be initiated. So I had a complete identity crisis, to tell you the truth. At that time I felt somewhat awkward. But my spiritual master understood and was kind. And gave me some credit in the midst of that sacrifice and said, I want to give him two initiations at once. Well, that was a relief, because I wasn't sure he wasn't going to do that. So, okay. Okay, at least I would get my Brahmin thread back. That was something. And then he said, in fact, I would even like to give him three. Right? We'd like to give him sannyas as well, but we'll have to postpone that due to the the particular rules and regulations in this regard. But otherwise, that was there. So by then, you know, it got pretty nice. So, but it was not easy to do this, and that was only sitting down in the sacrifice. But afterwards, it was again a whole thing to bow down, and it was, I had to get used to it, to bow down. And scriptures say to bow down many times, and when one sees the spiritual master, that was a bit of an adjustment. Like that, I had to practice, and I still have to practice in this relationship, to not take it casual, to not take it cheaply, to really get very serious about it as a disciple, and try to be a disciple, and try to really act in such a way as he likes, as he would like, in all situations. By now, I have some idea of what he likes and what he doesn't like. And so, the spiritual master is always present in his instructions. And it doesn't come at all automatic that one is just, well, you know, like, I mean, I'm a disciple and just following. It is a real endeavor. But if that endeavor is being made, then the relationship becomes very meaningful. And that's the whole purpose of it. The time of initiation is a very significant time. The disciple makes vows, and vows to follow the regulative principles, to chant 16 rounds, and to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. So that's a very heavy vow that is being made. That's a very big thing for life, right? No matter what happens, life can take funny turns, right? I have found myself many times in a country where I had never expected to go. One of them was Australia, right? You know, that's one place I never thought of going. Somehow or other, in India, I used to see the Aussies, you know, with their funny floppy heads, and I thought, these people are weird, you know. I'm not going to see big bellies or like. Yeah, floppy heads are right. Yeah, they're walking around. I think, well, I'm never going to go to that country, I thought to myself. Little did I know. And I came to this country, not by my own idea, but on the order of my spiritual master, right? Who in the morning said, I was in Vrindavan, and in the morning he said, you're going to Detroit and you can become the bookkeeper. Now, Detroit didn't sound very attractive to me at all. Bookkeeper sounded even worse, you know. So, and I was in the Holy Dham Vrindavan. I really didn't want to leave. And I was going to go to Detroit to become the bookkeeper. And it was an order. So I said, oh no, my God. In the afternoon, it was Australia. So after Detroit and bookkeeper, I was ready for anything, even for Australia. Okay, let's go. Australian. So Australia I came, and it was somewhat funny, because I said, well, how will I get there? He said, just ring the temple president and they'll send you a ticket. And I did, and sure enough, you know, send me money for a ticket. So I bought a ticket, and when I came there, temple president was really nice. He said, do you have any money left over? I said, I do. He said, go buy yourself and your wife some clothes. I thought, wow, he's a real nice guy, you know. And then the next day, he called me in the office and said, so, how are you going to pay your debt?
a debt? He said, yeah, you have to pay it all back. He said, wow, you should have told me yesterday before I bought all the clothes, you know. Anyway. Then I had to collect. So they arranged it, and Atmaram was the Sankirtan leader in Melbourne. And, he said, don't worry, Prabhu, I'll give you a great area. And he sure did, you know. Sent me with Gyana Samudra in the van, who dropped me off in between these factories, and there I was walking with a roll of paintings. And I was going, and I was seeing this funny sign in the street which said, Blood and Bones, $20. So thinking, Blood and Bones, $20? What is this? Where am I? What's going on here? Whose blood? Whose bones? Kind of look over my shoulder. Blood and Bones, $20, right? You feel awkward. And I walked a little further and went and saw a factory which had a chicken on the outside. I noted that. There's a chicken outside the fence. What's a chicken doing here? Walked inside, full with chickens, and they were chopping the heads and put the bodies on a conveyor belt, and there was blood and grease everywhere. And in the midst of that, I had to sell paintings. And I'm holding it up. I even sold one for $400, I still remember. And the money was, he felt like taking it with rubber gloves, you know. I was like, thanks. okay. Get a plastic bag for that. And I remember when I came out of that place, I told that chicken on the outside, run, chicken, run. And he didn't listen, the fool. He tried to get inside. Yeah. And it was one place after another, sheepskin and the big Hortico factory with the bins and the big kettle where they boil the heads and the legs and the tails and etc. to gelatine. I went to all these places for 1 week, you know. Longer than 1 week, right? Remembering Atmaram. Said, well, you know, we have to do it all. You know, we had to be merciful to all these places. Okay. Anyway, so I got my first experiences in Australia. And then after a while, my health wasn't so good, so they thought I should go to a farm which was good for health. And then I was on this farm, and they knew Gorides, the biggest farm ISKCON ever had, 10,000 hectares. And there I was, and they said, okay, we're going to the paddock. I said, the what? The paddock, mate. What's a paddock, right? It's the field, the paddock. Okay, all right, we're going to the paddock. And there someone gave me a shovel. One devotee dressed up in a dust coat and floppy hat gave me a shovel and said, g'day, mate. Come on, mate. Move your hoofs, right? And at that point, it hit me. I had a total culture shock, right? I mean, you have to understand, I came from Vrindavan, where everyone has lotus feet, right? And suddenly, I had hoofs. And I looked down at my feet and I thought, do I have hoofs? Right? Do I really have hoofs? Huh? I was in a state of shock that I had hoofs. I had landed in Australia. There are many more adventures that I had in this country. Some of them too gross to mention in this Bhagavatam class, I'm afraid. But they certainly were interesting. Anyhow, the point is, the unexpected will happen in life. Huh? From one moment to the next, we find ourselves in another world, in another country, but with the same vow. That. Suddenly everything is inauspicious. So many things happened. The last week I had some back problems, and I remember how I got these back problems when I flew out of a car. bang and landed on my back in India, unexpected, and was sitting in a wheelchair after some time and thinking, will I ever get out of this? And suddenly life looked very different from the wheelchair. I said, oh my God, you know, here I am. Is this it? Am I going to stay like this? These kind of thoughts come when you sit in a wheelchair, definitely. Yes, so anything can happen, right? And the point is, but the vow remains in any condition, right? One may have 12 kids and 3 wives, but they can all leave, right? And then, all alone, still with the same vow. So, in this way, one cannot invest so much energy anymore in anything else. One must invest energy in that vow, somehow or other, make it into something. Live with it, for better or worse, right? That's it. Yeah. Too late now. Yeah. Once taken that vow, you've got it. Because after initiation, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, if you don't follow the vow and you engage again in sinful activity, the reactions are bigger than they would have been without that initiation. Heavy, huh? Yes, it is heavy. But, you know, it is also nice. It is not just heavy. It is also actually a shelter, a security. It is really something that is always there, no matter what happens. All the other things that can happen, they happen. Yeah. But this vow, Four Regulative Principles, 16 rounds, and following my spiritual master is always there. Always there. And it is a liberation. A liberation from the mental platform. Shall I go left? Shall I go right? Shall I do it? Shall I not do it? I don't know. Is it right or is it wrong? Is it good or is it bad? Who knows? Some people say it is good, some say it's bad. And all these kind of mental anxieties are disappearing. Therefore, for the dedicated servant of a bona fide spiritual master, his duty becomes crystal clear. He knows what to do in life. And this is giving a tremendous energy. It is said, Vyavasyatmika buddhir ekeha kurunandana bahusaka yanantascha. Last line doesn't come. Doesn't come. Blocked. But anyway, it is saying that when one becomes fixed in the absolute truth, then one is single-minded focus. And whereas another person is bahusaki anantascha, he is like many-branched, his intelligence is many-branched, his energy is everywhere, right? Invested in so many things. Well, try this, maybe that's good also. This looks good, but that looks good at the same time, you know. So, an eye in all direction and try to never miss an opportunity. But in Krishna consciousness, it is different. In Krishna consciousness, we just focus our energy. We focus our energy to go back to Godhead. That is the purpose. That is the purpose of our life, and that is the purpose of the guru-disciple relationship. And somehow or other, that's our focus. So in this way, Krishna descends in our life through his representative. It's a very nice system, because otherwise it's very difficult. All different spiritualists are all having the problem that, first of all, God is invisible. Right? This is one of the complications when you get involved in spiritual life, that so many different religions, etc., because nobody is sure, can't see him. He is invisible. This is the first problem. Then the second problem is that his eternal abode appears to be far away. And to actually make a connection through some process, you have to bridge that distance, and that's very difficult. But in Krishna consciousness, it is not like that. Actually, it is all here. It is all happening here. One can serve Krishna here. Like, there are some literatures that describe the more intimate leelas of Radha and Krishna. We cannot see those intimate leelas. The Astakaliya leela, the eightfold pastimes of Krishna. And it says that in the course of these eightfold pastimes, Krishna goes to the kunjas, where the gopis reside, and preparing the kunja, or the particular grove, which is in the forest somewhere, very nicely, for Krishna. It is said that one of the gopis was sweeping the floor of that, the marble floor of that kunja, with her hair, right? Her long hair opened up, sweep the floor. So, some people are thinking that, whew, this is very high, very interesting and very high. It is very high and very interesting. There's no doubt about it. But to sweep this floor with a broom is as high as to sweep that other floor up there with the hair. There is no difference. It's the same. Because both are totally transcendental. Both are equally potent. And this is the wonderful nature of Krishna consciousness, that we can do it here, in this material world, in the middle of matter, and come totally to the transcendental platform. And that is unique. You don't find that in any other process. Like, for example, in Christianity, we find that there is also a very practical solution in life, and the idea is one should engage in good works. Good works, and in this way one can help his fellow men, etc. And then, with that, one can accrue so many benedictions that one can finally attain, at the end of life, the spiritual situation. That's basically it. But we are attaining it now. We're attaining the spiritual situation immediately. The day that one enters into the temple, one enters as if through an invisible wall. Right? This looks like a house, but it is not. It is a temple. Right? It is the spiritual world. Here everything is transcendental. Whatever we do is transcendental. Yeah. In the same way, as soon as one acts on the order of the spiritual master, wherever one is, everything is transcendental. Right? It doesn't matter. One can be in the middle of the world, but walk a transcendental path. One can work in a job, one can study, one can work in a bank, right? One can do anything in this world, and when it has the blessings of the spiritual master, it is transcendental. So this is the amazing feature of that connection. If one acts upon the order of the spiritual master, then there is a transcendental path right through this material energy. Suddenly it opens up right there and then. Which reminds me of a story which was told by one devotee who joined in 1967, who said that when he was younger, he was sitting on a hill, and one day he saw a gate in the sky, and a gate with three doors, and suddenly the gate opened, and there was an elder saintly personality sitting there who said, "Yes, you can come. You can now come." So he said, "I'm not ready yet. I'm still very young." The sage said, "All right." And the doors closed. So after he had said that, he was a little shocked, first of all, of what he had seen, and second of all, that he got some opportunity and that he had said, I'm not ready yet, and that the door had closed on him. So he said, what a fool am I? Whatever it was, I got a chance, and now I've blown it. I have blown it.
So, for a long time, he was thinking about this experience, but nothing much happened. Other than a few months later, it was in the middle of winter, he had a dream. And in the dream, he was flying, and he was flying over a city, and this city was built on hills. And just as he was wondering about this place, a voice said, go to San Francisco, in the 60s. And so he thought, last time I missed the boat, I'm not going to miss again. So this time he went in the middle of the night. He was still living with his parents, wrote a note, I've gone to San Francisco, left in the middle of the night, went hitchhiking, and it was cold, and it started to snow, and he thought I might freeze. He raised his hand trying to flag down a car, and the car stopped and said, where do you want to go? He said, to San Francisco. The man said, get in, and drove him all the way across America, 5,000 kilometers, to San Francisco. Right? Got a ride straight to San Francisco. He's thinking, something is really going to happen in San Francisco. Nothing happened in San Francisco, other than that he recognized that he had seen the place in his dream. When he was in San Francisco, after a little while, in fact, he was running out of money. First, he had some money, so he bought a bike. He bought a bike, a little motorbike, and since he had this little motorbike, he took a job with a courier service. You know those guys, driving around. So he was driving around like that, like for a courier service. And they drive like crazy, and so did he. So one day, he smashed into a car and injured his leg. He didn't break it, but it was hurt, and he could not walk properly. So the police took the bike away, and he was fixed up, and he was recovering. So one day, in that condition, with his crutches, he was sitting in the park. And as he was sitting in the park, he saw this parade come past, right? A huge chariot being pulled by all these people in flowing robes, etc., all orangey, pinkish, and lots of flowers and noise and this, that. And he thought that they were Buddhists or something from another world. And then he saw that on the chariot there was an elder, wiser, saintly personality, some sort of Buddha, and he recognized that this was the same man that he had seen in the gate in the sky. The story unfolds. Right? And all along he heard the song, of course, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But since he couldn't walk, he couldn't follow. So the whole thing was just going right in front of his eyes and disappeared. And he was just sitting there watching it like and saying, it happened again. Something came into my life and it just disappeared. I just missed the opportunity again. Right? So he was totally blown out. Anyway, what to do? Life went on and his leg got better. And so now was the time to go to the police station to collect his bike. So he went there, and on the way he thought, let me drop off my sleeping bag at the dry cleaner. So he took the sleeping bag, went to the place where the bike was stored, and when he was there, he heard some noise through the wall. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And he thought, what is that? That's the same song I heard in that parade. So he decided to go and check it out, and he walked into the temple, and the devotee said, you want to stay? You brought your sleeping bag. You want to move in? Yeah, great. Okay, you're welcome. Very nice, right? And he never left, right? From that day on, right? Just stayed in the temple. The devotees picked up his bike and sold it and gave all the money to Krishna. No problem. That was all arranged, yeah. And so
We just don't know how Krishna consciousness will go, right? And what Krishna will do. He may do something in a very mystical way. He may do something in a very down-to-earth way in our life. But when we are surrendering to a spiritual master, then from that moment we are on a transcendental path. And at that point, anything in our life is just directly connected to Krishna. So it becomes very exciting. It is the most wonderful, the most blessed thing. Therefore, this is really what everyone should do with his life. Somehow or other, find a bona fide spiritual master to get out of the dryness of making our own speculative decisions of what we're going to do with our life. And just say, shall I go, shall I do this, shall I do that, shall I stay here, shall I stay there? And just get involved in a network of karma. But as one is going in another direction, the direction of surrendering to a bona fide spiritual master, life becomes meaningful and exciting, and one can actually notice that step by step is coming closer to the spiritual world. Okay, stop. Any questions? Any comments?
Here we are in this temple. It's totally transcendental. From the moment you step through that gate, you just step into Vaikuntha. But it also depends on the quality of our surrender, how much we will be able to perceive that, and how much we will be able to perceive Krishna. But it's there. Right? So, in the same way, when you walk out of the gate, within the context of the order of your spiritual master, all within a framework, right? There is a certain framework of orders, of what you can do, what you cannot do. And if you stay within that, you're totally transcendental. You're in a whole transcendental atmosphere. Everything is transcendental. Except us. We may not be so transcendental. And therefore, we cannot fully appreciate it, just like in Vrindavan. Vrindavan is the holy dham. It's always transcendental. Yeah. But it's covered by a layer of yoga maya. So we cannot see that it looks like an Indian village to us. Oh, big pigs. Oh, so much garbage. Oh, those rickshaws. Too much, you know. That music. Speakers blasting everywhere. Right? The traffic, you know. Watch out. It's sometimes so difficult to see the spiritual world. Yeah. Other times we see when we are in Vrindavan, when you have dysentery, it's hard to see. I want to go home. Right? You are home. This is your home. I want to go to Australia. Yeah. Like that. No. It's a foreign place. Vrindavan is home. So we cannot always see the transcendental nature of Vrindavan. So we cannot always see the transcendental nature of the instructions of the spiritual master. And we cannot always see Krishna within all that. But we are in a transcendental realm. Just as when we enter into Vrindavan, we're in Vrindavan. There's no doubt about it. But we cannot perceive it. So that's what's holding us back. There's a wall between us and Krishna, the wall of our false ego. And the process of devotional service on the order of the spiritual master, which is followed, right? Scriptures, Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, that knocks holes into that wall. Yeah. Baff, a brick out, right? You can see a little bit, another brick out. Like that, little by little, we begin to see more and more about Krishna. Gradually, the wall of false ego breaks down. But we are in a transcendental situation, without a doubt. What do you think? You're working on it, huh? Fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah, I read the I read some books before I was a devotee, and then I read this book called Biography of a Yogi. You know, it was a popular book about Yogananda, and he was writing all about different impersonal yogis, and there was one who was knocking bricks out of a wall. But we are knocking bricks out of the wall of our false ego in this process, little by little. And you see more and more about Krishna as we're doing that. Then we'll recognize the transcendental situation we're in. But when we are so much under the moats, then we can be here in the temple and take it as a mundane place. And then we are in devotional service and think, I don't like this service. It's too much. And so on. But if one is totally transcendental, then one sees this is spiritual activity. What can I say? It's wonderful. So it takes time for the illusion to disappear. But this is reality, the spiritual world. And then when one becomes a topmost devotee, one sees the spiritual world always and everywhere. Every direction, one sees only the spiritual world. It's only a covering on top. What you think? Yes, it must have been. Yes, it was Prabhupada. Yeah, so somehow or other, this devotee made his connection with Srila Prabhupada through some sort of, he had some sort of vision. It was a genuine thing. It was in a mystic way that it happened in his life, and that he became a devotee in 1967. And what can be said? We all become devotees in different ways. Some of us get some sign like that, others don't. That doesn't matter so much. But all of us have to come to that point where we surrender. And that's where the real mystical, that's the most mystical moment. It was more mystical that he surrendered than that he saw a gate in the sky. He surrendered to Prabhupada. And he's still a devotee today. So, if someone joined in 67 and is still around in 2004, doing pretty good. Maybe quietly, but still there. And that's all we have to do. Stay for a lifetime within the context of Krishna consciousness. Our spiritual master is Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes we say like that in some interview. We say our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. Although one may not be a direct disciple of Prabhupada, still we'll say our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. Because in one sense Prabhupada is the spiritual master of all of us. But grand disciples may have a living spiritual master who connects them more to Srila Prabhupada. But everyone has this direct relationship with Prabhupada, must have that relationship with Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada set the standards for all of us, as the founder Acharya, as the example. And we know that if we simply dedicate ourselves to the standards that he set, then everything will become perfect. So in that way Prabhupada is still very, very present in our movement and in our spiritual life. Should be so. I guess we stop and have a little kirtan and a guru puja after that. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.